Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Nate, I was not shocked. I don't think most people were shocked, but it is official. CM Punk is aligned with property of a roster member of WWE Monday Night Raw, thanks to what Punk characterized as an offer way better than what Nick Aldis or Shawn Michaels presented to him from SmackDown and NXT, respectively. He called Raw home, and then we got a confrontation and an exchange with Seth Rollins. I like the segment a lot, and we'll get into the reasons why. But, Nate, I want to get your thoughts on how Punk's decision was revealed and what you thought of Seth's exchange with him.
I mean, like you said, it was kind of predictable in terms of, you know, him showing up on Monday Night Raw and saying that he's choosing Monday Night Raw. But I thought it kind of went well. I mean, one of the things that we talked about was on the VIP roundtable for NXT Deadline. Hey, we'll get that plug in early. But we just did a roundtable for Deadline, and CM Punk showed up at Deadline, and it's like he's showed up on SmackDown, on Raw, on NXT, and we weren't quite sure if this was going to be a thing. Almost like Jade Cargill for a little while, she was on like every show. We weren't sure if it was going to be something like that or not. So it's kind of nice that at least, okay, he showed up on each one. What am I going to choose? And now we've actually got a definitive like choice. So I like that. I thought the segment was pretty effective. You know, Seth Rollins, I mean, he makes a lot of good points, a lot of valid points. There's a lot of things that I personally agree with Seth Rollins here. In full disclosure, not a massive I like CM Punk's body of work. Do not necessarily like what I hear about the individual for the most part. So I kind of agree with a lot of what Seth is saying. And you know, as we know, a lot of, you know, a good villain and because that's kind of what Seth is going to be playing in this against CM Punk is definitely that heel role. You know, there's certainly some truth into the things that they're saying and, you know, like him being an issue in the backstage in the locker room and all of the, how he spent 10 years just bad mouthing WWE and trying to take down WWE from the outside. And I forget exactly how he worded it, but essentially things like that. I thought it was pretty effective in getting over, you know, Seth Rollins' feelings towards Punk, obviously in character, you know, because like ever since War Games, you know, as soon as CM Punk debuted, we saw Seth Rollins kind of just flipping out. So it's kind of nice to finally, and we've kind of understood why, but now you get that face to face. He's told him man to man, this is why I don't like you. This is why I don't like you being here. And, you know, I thought, like I said, that was pretty effective.
Yeah. I liked, first of all, I thought Punk was really good saying what he said the way that he said it. I'm a little curious if it was his idea or he was all on board with apologizing for leaving when he did, given, you know, his feelings at the time that I think are correct through now, which is I needed to step away. I did not understand at the time that people in the industry were criticizing Punk for leaving money on the table when what he was trying to do is save his life. He was not mentally and physically, and there are things more important than adding more millions to your bank account. And I was astounded by that and defended Punk's decision, even if it left WWE in a tough spot. You got to put the mental and physical health of people first. And obviously he had a lot of issues with how his situation was handled with his health. It's been dealt with, you know, in the legal sense and in podcasts and all of that in great depth. So I'd be curious to know if you like, he's like, hey, let me apologize. But it's sort of the thing they're doing right now. Like Drew's upset that Jaden apologized, Drew apologized sort of half-heartedly. Well, you know, it's just the idea is people need to be apologizing for things that they did. I just don't think Punk feels like he needs to apologize unless he's in his mind. And maybe technically the wording was, you know, he's sorry that people felt let down, that people paid to see him and didn't get to see him. But, you know, I mean, P- Punk's, I'm weighing my hands up and down like people do as a scale. Like Punk's life, wrestling man, feeling a little bummed out that a star wasn't there that they paid to see. I mean, come on, it's not even close. Punk was right to do what he did. Not necessarily everything he said afterwards were things that needed to be said or were fair, but it was almost surreal episode and up a central storyline in 2023 on Monday Night Raw. And I just got to say, Punk, like, this was an example of what makes Punk a star. And I think it's more than what he does in the ring. There's a lot of people who are really good wrestlers and are more good at Punk. He's a top-tier wrestler. But what makes him the star, the caliber that he is, with the type of following he has, where he can walk in after 10 years and have a Raw audience in Cleveland, not Chicago, but in Cleveland, change his name, not Seth's, after everything Seth has done since Punk left. The reason for that is that unflinching, unblinking confidence mixed with a sense that you're right or wrong doesn't matter, that he's opening up to them as a real person and that there's a connection there. So he's confident, almost cocky, not just almost, sometimes cocky, but people feel a connection to him. They feel that he stands up for what he believes in, which we know to be true, sometimes making more out of things than he needs to, but he stands up for things he believes in. And it was just fascinating watching him in a more polished environment at WWE as compared to AEW. I mean, the camera angles, the timing, heck, whoever does his hair. I mean, like, everything is just a level higher with him right now, and he's filled out a little bit. I think he's taken a little more attention to putting on some muscle, too, that makes him feel a little bit more just physically formidable in a visual sense, not just superficial. I mean, just in a more visual sense. So I just thought it was like, I don't think Paul Levesque, for instance, is watching this going, oh God, what did we sign up for? Why did we bring this guy back? He's lost it, or he never had it. And we've passed him. We've laughed him. Superstars today are something that Punk never was, or the business has outgrown him. Punk was great here. Seth was just as great, though. I'm glad trying this up as like a shoot showing, you know, the footage from after they went off the air when Punk returned and all that. I thought that got a little silly, and as almost always happens anytime there's an attempt to work a shoot or do a shoot or pick your word order, it almost always fails. I mean, it's just it's not worth the trouble. It's hard to do. It's nearly impossible to pull off. That said, I do think people feel Seth feels he's speaking the truth, but he's willing to do business because he wants to main event at WrestleMania, and Punk is his ticket to move up in relevance on a roster full right now of babyface stars, you know, and just big names, you know, Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes and Drew McIntyre is red hot again, and Randy Orton is back, and on and on. So I thought Seth brought it too, and this was one of those situations that I think that would have played it really well, where fans who are on Punk's side are like, yep, he said it like it is. And people who are on Seth's side are like, yep, it's just a matter of time before this guy blows up. He always fools people at the beginning by seeming totally reasonable, and something's going to happen. He's going to overreact. He's a cancer to a locker room, and Seth is speaking the truth. I thought they were true to the reality, but melded it into the storyline in a way where if none of it was real life, it still would work as a storyline, which to me is what you should aim for when you do anything on television. There should be nothing that feels more real at the expense of something that fits within the normal boundaries of how pro wrestling tells stories. This just feels like everything I talked about really happened, and it sort of happened on camera. And the final note, and I'll throw it back to you, Nate, for any reaction to anything I've said or any points you've thought of that you want to bring up on this. They're not talking about AEW at all. They're giving AEW no respect, and they have to love it. It is not a chapter in the Punk return to WWE story that he stopped somewhere else. The only thing that came close was where Punk said, yeah, fans are disappointed, and just like he was when Roddy Piper showed up in WCW. And that could be a reference, obviously, to him showing up on AEW TV. But we haven't had, like, snide references to look what you did earlier this year or look what happened last year. You know, we've all seen it happen. We just they're just telling the Punk story that he left almost 10 years ago and now he's back without drawing a ton of attention to the AEW chapter. Obviously, a lot of people know about it. Probably most WWE fans know about it, but not all. Or they, you know, they didn't live it in terms of watching it, because way more people watch Raw than watch Dynamite. But they're aware of it, at least that it happened. And so they're not excluding it from the narrative, but they're not drawing attention to it. And I think that's clever, and I think it's smart and makes sense that they just feel they don't need to do that. Nate, back to you.
No, I agree. I agree. Because I think the one thing that and it was Punk himself that brought up was something along the lines of how you can't have a fight backstage in 2023. And it was just a subtle little nod to, if you know, you know, if you don't, you don't. But other than that, like, yeah, you're absolutely right. They haven't really gone to that pool, which would be really easy to go to. Like, WWE doesn't really like to do that and bring up other brands and things anyway. But, you know, if you're just trying to write a story as a storyteller, you know, that's an easy well to pick from. Just you telling that story about going to another company and whatever. So I kind of do applaud them for that. And I do like the direction that it is going. He's kind of going right now. He's behaving, I guess, is the best way I can describe it for all intents and purposes. I mean, I don't really know much about, you know, the backstage dealings or anything like that, but, you know, it seems like when he's on TV and, you know, his just demeanor and things in the ring, it seems like he's genuinely happy to be there. He wants to be there. And all of the things that we've heard about, you know, and all of that negativity that I've heard come out of his mouth about WWE in the last 10 years, you know, it's kind of just water under the bridge. And I'm in a way, I really commend WWE and a lot of talent for being able to do that, because, man, that's tough to just kind of like take some really bad blood and kind of, you know, bury the hatchet, if you will. But, you know, it seems to be working. And if he kind of stays this course and he doesn't cause some of the issues that I don't want to say cause. Let me not say cause, but get involved in some of these backstage altercations and things like that, and kind of keep his nose clean. Sure, draw money. Please, you know, go ahead. It makes sense, yeah. You know. But that's the thing that I'm worried about, and it's that negative kind of just negative energy in the locker room. Kind of snowballing, and one thing leads to another, and just the next thing you know, that it takes a good environment. It just takes one bad egg to ruin the batch, if you will. So that's what I'm worried about. And one thing completely, it's a little off topic, but it's not, but it's kind of funny, the stark comparison. We're talking about 10 years ago, the whole Colt Cabana thing, you know, which obviously wasn't quite 10 years ago. We're coming up on 10 years ago, the Colt Cabana podcast and everything.
Yeah.
And it was 2 weeks ago, in a town just a couple miles up the street from me, went to an indie show where I watched Colt Cabana portray Harvey Dunkelman in a small little VFW club, where he took on a nice little woman playing a grandmother. So it's just kind of a stark comparison. It's funny to see like where people go in 10 years. It's kind of funny.
Wow. Yeah. So going back to a previous point you made, WWE has a stake in this working also, not just CM Punk, because they want to show that their environment is better than AEW's. They have a stake in having Punk succeed. And that's fascinating, because there are people in that company who don't want Punk to succeed. You know, like they want to be right that what Seth said in that is reality, that Punk is toxic for every locker room. He isn't going to change, or if he changes, he'll change back. And it will undo of WWE bringing Punk back, which is not denial, but I think a belief that whatever is, quote, wrong with Phil Brooks, whatever causes, you know, pick your phrase. Different people would phrase it different ways. But whatever causes Punk to be such a controversial figure, it's something that WWE's current environment, which they would argue is improved upon when Punk was having so many issues there, and it's way better than AEW, and they are professionals, and they have a locker room full of professionals who do business and make money together. They want to prove that's true. So Punk has an, even though there's people in the locker room rooting against him because they want to be right, largely the institution of WWE wants him to succeed. So Punk, of course, wants to prove it was AEW's fault, not his, but so does WWE. Most of all, they just want to make money with him and set records and take pressure off other people who they might have to lean on, if not for Punk being around at this point. Punk's not going to be around 12 years from now headlining shows. I mean, he's not a future project. He is a win-now type player. And obviously that's what they're doing. A lot more to talk about, including him entering the Royal Rumble and interaction with Cody, and certainly more aspects of this. But, Nate, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll move to phone calls and emails and other topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, December 11th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including the post shows following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and also the flagship, which is on our Blue Logo show. Search Wade Keller in whatever podcast app you use. You'll see our logos pop up, the red one and the blue one with my face on it. Subscribe to both and you'll be covered. Also search PW Torch, and that'll bring up a couple other logos, including our charcoal gray VIP free sample feed, which if you're using the Apple Podcast app, you can actually upgrade to all of our VIP shows and ad-free versions of our free shows for a more streamlined listening experience within the app using your Apple account. Single click, just click upgrade, and you'll go premium just by touching your fingerprint to the side of your phone or whatever version of iPhone you're using. So it's pretty easy, and you're on board getting all of our shows and ad-free versions of these. You can get more information on our PW Torch Dailycast lineup too at pwtorchdailycast.com, or just subscribe and go to search PW Torch and subscribe to the colorful logo, the PW Torch Dailycast logo, which includes the weekly PWT Talks NXT show, which very often today's guest co-host is part of, and that is Nate Lindberg. Nate, welcome back to the co-host chair after Raw. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, good to be here. Good to be here. Yeah, I am Nate Lindberg, usually talking NXT, but talking some Raw tonight, PWT Talks NXT on the Daily Cast. I just recorded a VIP roundtable last night, with Kelly Wells and Bruce Hazelwood talking about NXT deadlines. So that's up for VIP members. And quick shout out, thank you to Kevin Catani for filling in for me in a jam. I was supposed to do Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks the other night, and I couldn't last minute. So thanks, Kevin. I appreciate the tag, man. But yeah, glad to be here, and thank you. Thanks for having me. It's always good to sit down and be able to talk some wrestling with you.
Well, it's always fun having you on. I also, since we're thanking people, want to thank Rich and Travis on Friday for hosting the SmackDown Post Show. And also Chris and Justin for hosting Saturday night, the Collision Post Show. It's rare I miss a post show. It's even more rare that I miss two in a row. I was seeing my son in his high school play, and it was great to have substitutions so that I could be there for that. And it's just, you know, good to get some other voices in the mix covering these shows. VIP members got to hear my take on SmackDown on Saturday afternoon when I caught up on the show on the Wade Keller Hotline on the VIP feed, and I'll have my Collision report up for VIP members soon here. All right, well, we got a lot to talk about when it comes to Raw, so let's give out the phone numbers and the email, and then get to more conversation. It's not just all about CM Punk tonight. A lot of other things going on too, including Cody against Nakamura and more. The phone number, if you want to call us, if you're live streaming the show right now, by the way, you can live stream our show by finding the link in my TV. There's a link at the top and bottom that'll take you right to the live stream. We start about 5 minutes after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision go off the air. You can also find the link at wadekellerpostshow.com. You can navigate to the live stream there, wadekellerpostshow.com. All right, the number to give us a call, 347-215-8558. I'll say it slower, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be part of the conversation. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Please note that new address. It's no longer at pwtorch.com. We had some issues with spam and the email's not forwarding to me. So we are just using a reliable, smooth Gmail account for our show email. So that's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. If you have sent emails in recent months and they didn't get read on the air, or I apologize for that, but just start sending them to that new email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We're trying to change that address everywhere on the site and in our boilerplate. Find all the locations that the old address is embedded, but that is the way to email us. And again, you don't have to live stream the show to be part of it. You can watch the show, email us, and then download the show in the morning or in the afternoon, whatever your schedule is. All right, with all that business taken care of, let's get to our first caller of the day here. It'll be Jay in Michigan, and then on deck we got a 440 area code. Jay, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Thanks for having me, Wade. A lot to say about the CM Punk stuff. First of all, I really want to say, like, WWE does what WWE does so well as far as just the presentation, you know, of Punk and teasing so many different things. Man, I think that has been very well done. But to get to the business at hand, I loved the way that they allowed Rollins to kind of, you know, go off with little interruption from Punk, because I felt like that, you know, the tension between the two of them, I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, they're doing business, but, you know, it's rooted in, you know, real tension. So at least as far as I understand, and I think that's a great thing. So, you know,
I can verify that.
I had no doubt that it was Wade, but you know, I wanted to just make sure. You know, I don't want to go overstepping my bounds. You know, but I'm glad you were able to confirm that for me, and I think rightfully so. You know, I think that everything Rollins said in his promo was so on the money, and I don't know if you got a chance to listen to the post show from Friday, but me and Travis kind of had a nice little back and forth about it. You know, because I basically stated my position. I know I'm going to come off as a heel, and I'm not really with the, you know, I'm not into the feel-good story, but I really feel like CM Punk is a hypocrite. And I get that business is business, and that's where Travis was coming from, and, you know, he shot down my notion. But I understand that Punk is a huge star, and Rollins is not the star of that magnitude. But I really don't – I felt like tonight – and Wade, you make a great point to note this. Like, WWE fan base has been into the stories they're telling. So I felt like as of right now, it's kind of split. You know what I mean? Like, I heard a lot of Rollins support. I heard CM Punk support in certain moments. So, but I think if we're really, really telling the story here, it's kind of hard not to really side with Rollins, because Rollins was a catalyst to help. You know, when WWE wasn't as popular, you know, as fun, or, you know, it wasn't the cool place to be, you know, when there was so much residual Vince hate, you know, I mean, like 4 or 5 years ago, Rollins was on the front line, standing for the team, standing for the locker room, and people killed him for that. And now to see, and then, you know, they're not going to really bring too much light on the CM Punk going to AEW, and I don't think that they should. But, you know, when AEW started and that kind of was the cool company, and, you know, WWE was WWE, but it was starting to – the momentum for AEW was building. And then, you know, now you look at it 2 years later, WWE is in a position that they haven't been in a long time, and the overall product is at an all-time high, and Seth Rollins was a huge part of that. Like, he stood through the tough times, and, you know, now he's at the forefront and one of the catalysts for what they built. And then you got CM Punk coming coming back into the fold when they're at the height, when it's not like they truly – I mean, they of course they can use him, but they didn't really need him. And, you know, Punk's coming back with this narrative of I'm home. Like, that would rub me in the locker room a little – I feel some type of way about that too, man. So, you know, I'm loving that you can make you can tell that story and work that into the program, because that's just gonna make it that much better. So, you know, I'll kind of start with that now, and I'll let you guys chime in.
Yeah, Nate, go to respond to what Shay brought up.
So, like with CM Punk, like I'm kind of in between in line where Jay is a little bit. I'm not a huge CM Punk fan, and like in terms of his just overall attitude and anger issues, I guess is the best way to put it. Behavioral issues, things like that. The way he decides to handle business and that it's not the way I conduct business, and I don't expect the people that I do business with to conduct themselves. So wrestling is a business, and you kind of need to stay professional. I feel like there's certainly times where he doesn't do that. And, you know, whether or not some of those like AEW media scrums were, worked or not, whatever. But just some of the things that he came out of his mouth with a live microphone, I don't know. I would not necessarily want my employees doing that. So that's my issue. And that's just, you know, kind of right there is like, can you control him from a corporate angle, corporate environment? And if you're not able to control him, what is that going to do, you know, behind the scenes with, in the locker room with, morale. So, but you know, Seth Rollins, like Jay said, he's got a lot of really good points, and Seth Rollins is one of the ones that really did carry us through some of those dark times 4 or 5 years ago when we were kind of hate watching the product, or at least I was in a lot of cases. I think they are at a really great creative point right now across the board, Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. We actually had a really good conversation. It was on Tuesday on PwC Talks NXT with the caller, who's talking about how, you know, we thought NXT was, you know, creatively one of the better shows on TV right now. But as we're talking, we're giving credit to Raw and to SmackDown, and we're kind of like, you know, this is the first time in a long time where it doesn't feel like a slog to get through everything. I still don't necessarily have all of the time in the week to watch Raw, SmackDown, NXT live. I'll be honest, I only usually watch Raw and SmackDown live if Wade says to me, hey, do you want to come and co-host tonight? Usually I'll keep up with highlights, DVR, kind of fast forwarding and things. But I am finding myself, if I have the time, trying to make time to watch live because I want to. I don't feel like it's okay. It's Monday. I got to watch wrestling because it's what I've done for 20 years. I'm actually invested in the stories and things. I think they're doing a really good job, creatively, and bringing it right back into CM Punk and Seth Rollins for that matter. I like the story and what they're telling so far, because like you said, it is kind of rooted in reality. Those are the best stories where it's either rooted in reality or, you know, something like an Austin McMahon where you can take your own reality and kind of substitute it into what they're telling. anything that somebody can just latch onto and kind of see themselves in, I guess, is obviously going to, at least I think, should kind of capture somebody. And that's kind of where they're going. So I dig it. I really like the direction they're going here.
Jay, elaborate on what you need to see, say, in the next month to 3 months that would in any way change your opinion on Punk being given this opportunity and ultimately not if nothing bad happens, what will your thoughts be if it's all good?
Here's the interesting part about all of this, Wade. You know, and who's the co-host for the night, man? I apologize.
Nate Lindberg, yes.
Okay, the interesting thing about it is, you know, just an origin story for me. Like, CM Punk is legitimately one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and he was a catalyst to getting me back into wrestling. Like, back in 2010, 2011 sure. is when I had been out of wrestling for a long time, and then, like, you know, I followed my heyday guys that were still around at that time, you know, but I hadn't really gotten into too many newer acts. And then, you know, I seen CM Punk. I'll never forget it. The first time I ever saw CM Punk was at the Rumble in 2010 when he was doing the Straight Edge Society thing, and I was like, wow, what's going on here? So I've always been captivated by Punk, but I've always been captivated by Phil Brooks, the actual person, too. Like, I felt like he is one of those dudes that was, like, really real and really genuine to who he is, whether right or wrong. So all of the backstage drama and everything, like, I was here for it, because when Punk was at his peak in WWE, he always came off as the cool anti-rebel, where it's like, yeah, you know, he was saying the things, because, like, those weren't the best times for WWE, and he was saying the things that we as fans felt and believed, but he was also a top guy, and we were happy that he was a top guy, but it always felt like, Wade, you always mention it, like, you know, he was always kind of, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm sure you'll know what I'm talking about. Like, basically, Punk was the perfect guy to go at the company when the company, like, he needed something to fight against. He needed to go against the authority in real time. But in today's WWE, it's nothing but goodwill. They're doing a phenomenal job. So the essence of what I love about Punk, there is no real, like, I'm not going to say there's no place for him, it's no value, but what I love about Punk, you know, the turmoil and all of that stuff, is no real need for it or no real place for it. And, like, those are the things that rub some guys the wrong way. So I'm not going to really get – it's not going to feel genuine. Like, none of this stuff really feels genuine to me. It just feels like it's part of the act, you know what I mean?
Jay, that's the thing that Punk's got to prove over time is that it's going to work out, that he isn't just white-knuckling his way and being phony about all this, that this is who he is, or these circumstances work well for him. Jay, anything else that you want to bring up?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too long-winded. I could go on and on about this, but it just feels like, ultimately, I guess what I will say is that I am looking forward to the Seth Rollins program, and, you know, the next time they kind of lock horns, it'll be a very much back and forth. You know, I think they allow Rollins to say what he needed to say tonight, and then there's going to be a back and forth from here. But, you know, the way Rollins really broke it down is kind of the way, you know, some of, you know, just me and my friends talk about it. Like, I'm like, man, I feel like Rollins is going to go out there to show CM Punk up, to show he can't keep up, to show he's not the best no more, and to, like, really, really put him in his place. And, you know, the last thing I'll add is, like, it's speaking of, like, voids and things of that nature, like, the one thing I look at with Cody Rhodes and that I really respect about him is that he left the company, you know, at the bottom of the card, barely on the card, doing the startup stuff, and he went out there, he rebranded himself, he remade himself, he made himself into a star, and he actually helped facilitate the revolution that CM Punk was talking about. He actually went out and did it, and then he came back a much better version of himself and put himself at the top of the card based upon things that he did, you know, in other places. Whereas, you know, there will be no mention of what CM Punk did in AEW, because that didn't really, like, that doesn't really add to the story. So basically, CM Punk was always, like, the anti, even though he was in WWE, he was the anti-WWE hero, and now he's, like, just living off of, I mean, when he left, he was a main eventer. He's coming back as a main eventer. It's like, it just feels like he was just built by WWE at this point, and that was, like, kind of his whole position, is that I'm not like these guys. So it comes off phony, but I'm not bashing it to the standpoint of, like, I don't want to see what they do, but just at my core, I just kind of feel like it just feels kind of phony, you know, with what CM Punk is doing.
Yeah, no, I don't even think CM Punk should blame anyone for thinking that. I mean, I don't know to what degree he takes responsibility for how he's reacted to circumstances. I know in his mind he feels justified by pushing back against a lot of things, but I don't know in retrospect, like all of us, if sometimes he thinks, oh, I overreacted to something and I wish I could take it back, or I wish I could dial it down, or I wish I took a deep breath. We all have those moments. And if Punk has that, I haven't heard it. I haven't heard him be self-deprecating in that way, but he has to understand that people look at him a certain way based on a lot of very public things. But, you know, if he's only focused on his side of the story, he's got a lot to go on when it comes to Vince McMahon and Paul Levesque and what happened with the whole WWE situation and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Hangman Page and everything going on in AEW. I mean, he's got a lot on his side. The
can I...
wrong or making stuff up. It's just I'm almost done. It's not that he's just making stuff up. It's that he can't let anything go, that everything becomes a five-alarm fire with him, and he reacts with such, with in such a way that's so disruptive that it sort of it distracts from sometimes him being right. Go ahead, Jay.
You know, it seems like if we look back, you know, from my perspective, Wade, I feel like I think he had issues with WWE, the company, at his core, but I don't feel like, and you know way more than I do, but it never really totally felt like he just was so, like, his hatred was so much toward Vince. Like, it seemed like, I mean, from stuff that I've seen, it seemed like him and Vince did not get along, really. And I remember him saying, you know, obviously in the pipe bomb, but it's like, I feel like a lot of his heat and issues came with Triple H. And I remember the doofus son-in-law that was supposed to crumple the company actually is the one who resurrected and facilitated it being where it is now. And he comes back to, you know, a Triple H-led WWE. And so to not be able to let anything go, he certainly seemingly let something go that was like a big, big thing for him. And then on top of that, man, they keep trying to push this whole idea that Punk has changed. Like, you know, I guess that's where the benefit of ignoring everything that happened in AEW helps, because we just seen like what you know, a lot of the divisive things that was talked about with CM Punk back in the WWE run, it only heightened when things went south in AEW, because they did not have a strong hand like Vince, you know, to like actually be the boss. You know what I mean? Everybody thought they was the boss in AEW, and that's why they couldn't really work things out. That's my perspective. So, you know, it's what a time, man. Like the doofus son-in-law, you know, is the one who helped get CM Punk back in, and like, you know, he was supposed to crumble the company, but time has shown otherwise.
So yeah, good comments, Jay. I appreciate your perspective. I want to respond to a couple things, and we'll go from there. But I was good hearing from you, Jay.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. It's rare that I call on a Monday, so, you know, I'm obviously compelled. But appreciate you guys, man.
Yes.
Wade, you keep it up.
Absolutely.
Man. You always do an awesome job, man. And I love your commentary. I love what you do, and I love how you present I love what you do with your platform, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that very much. So one thing is, has CM Punk changed? I think the circumstances have changed. And if he changed, he would have been different in AEW. You can't separate the AEW context, which Jay just talked about. There's all these bosses, a lot of passive aggressiveness, a lot of jealousy. Is he getting paid too much? We built this, and then he gets paid how much and gets pushed how hard, and Tony's how big of a fan. There's a lot of different things going on in AEW that just aren't happening in WWE. So Punk can change pretty quickly, or he can be the same person, and he doesn't have to change. He just won't run into the same things he did in AEW that triggered him. So you have that as an issue. As for, well, Punk was close than he was to Triple H 10 years ago. True, you know, Punk talked about, oh, Vince and I would, you know, text each other in the middle of the night. And Vince didn't do that with more than one or two other guys, whatever, however Punk framed that. But the buck stopped with Vince. You know, I mean, it was his company. He knew what was going on, and Punk was very disgruntled with the company and how things were handled. So on a personal level, they got along, but he obviously wasn't heard and voiced that displeasure. But, you know, as, you know, Paul Levesque, as he said at the post-event presser, you know, he's changed in 10 years, and he thinks Punk has too. The key right now with Punk isn't that he's faking being nice, even if the sentiment right now behind the scenes is he just seems a little too happy, a little too friendly, laying it on kind of thick. Is he trying to make up, you know, make up for his reputation? Is it overcompensating? I think, I mean, again, this is just, you know, it's a small sample size, but from the people I hear from in there, they're thinking this probably is genuine because he has a genuine reason, Nate, to be thrilled that he gets to make some more money and redeem himself and his image in a company that has changed for the better in a lot of ways since he was gone. So he doesn't have to be insincere or a hypocrite to say, I'm home. This is what he always wanted WWE to be. And he can tell himself that in theory, and it might even be true. Just a better run company that is on a big platform that does things professionally. AEW, he felt, was unprofessional. So he can be with people in their heads here, this sort of clock ticking. It's just a matter of time. Something just, an honest mistake is going to be made, or a decision that he disagrees with is going to be suggested, and he's going to melt down. And that's what people are on edge about. And it really is going to be a situation where we just have to let time play out. And if Punk has an unprofessional meltdown under the pressure and when he disagrees with something, it's going to reflect poorly on him, more so than WWE, almost no matter what he says, because people are going to say, even if he's got a point, how is he the one who this happens to constantly? There's got to be something he's doing if this is always happening. So he has a great incentive to stay with the positivity, and wrestlers sound like they're willing to give him a chance or at least just tolerate him enough to make money with him, even if they think he's being phony. And over time, he'll win them over. So it's a fascinating story, even setting aside pro wrestling, just a famous person in a workplace who's well-known trying to redeem himself. It's kind of the Jey Uso story that they told about him going from SmackDown to Raw, but in real life. Nate, anything else you want to add to that quickly? Because we've got our on-site correspondent who has very limited time, but anything else you want to just mention quick before I go to him?
I mean, I can't disagree with anything that you just said. I mean, I can't, like, CM Punk, an amazing entertainer. He's got a great body of work, but it's that explosiveness and the reactiveness to a situation that is what could potentially get him in trouble. You know, yeah. He is, if he can rein that in and he can, you know, like I said earlier, kind of keep his nose clean. Sure. I'm all about giving people a second chance, you know, and that's totally great. But otherwise, man, I the way I kind of feel right now is like what you just said. It's just, I'm waiting. It's a ticking time bomb and I'm waiting.
Yep. All right, very good. Let's go to Dom in Cleveland, who is our on-site correspondent tonight. He got to be there for the pop of the night for The Miz. Dom, welcome. Good to talk to you.
Hey, how you guys doing? Sorry, I didn't mean to rush there. I certainly have more time now. I was just dropping my dad off. We got out right at 11 and pretty much beat the traffic, so we were back at his place before I knew it. I dropped him off, and I'm available to talk. But, yeah, things were good. It was
nice.
A show well worth the price of admission, I'd say. You know, we had a good time, you know, from start to finish. Traffic was very heavy on the way in. Pretty much spent about 45 minutes just, you know, within a stone throw of the arena as people were kind of piling in. And, you know, we got to our seats just about, I don't know, maybe eight minutes before the show actually started. But it was good to see. I mean, a pretty packed house. All the you know, levels were full besides the upper level that you don't – I guess the hard cam's not pointing at, you know the usual, right? But, yeah, I mean, it seemed like a good crowd. I did send you some notes because I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to actually get on the line. So I'm trying to pull those up now. But, yeah, I mean, you know, pretty much – I mean, I've been to a ton of these shows. You know, wasn't like that much better than any other Raw I've ever been to. But certainly it was nice to see some of the star power that was there. I know there was some star power kind of missing on the last couple of shows. Like, obviously CM Punk was there. Rhea was there. And, you know, full Judgment Day appearance. You know, Jey Uso certainly, I think, was the most over person of the night. And then, of course, I know, like you said, the Miz or whatever. It's kind of hard to judge, right? Like, are they doing something good with the Miz, or is it just because he's in Cleveland that he was getting such an ovation? I mean, that, you know, combination with Johnny Gargano, another Cleveland native, was certainly the highest energy match of the night in terms of crowd interaction. It could have been the main event, and it almost felt like it should have been, because I think the crowd was a little bit gassed, you know, with the follow-up act of, you know, Shinsuke and Cody. It was like pretty mellow. I mean, there were times, you know, where they were kind of getting into it, but I think really, yeah, I mean, that could have easily, the 3v3 match could have easily been the main event.
Talk about the history. I know you've gone to shows in Cleveland before. Talk about the history of Miz's reaction. And was it always a situation where he had a lot of cheers, or was it mixed? I'm trying to recall if he was, you know, kind of an exception in that sense.
So the common theme for Miz is to come out to a loud applause. Folks are happy to see him, and then he turns on us. You know, he'll do something like where he'll be like, but you know what, just like LeBron James, I, you know, ditch you guys and, you know, I'm the real champion, et cetera, et cetera. Like, so we almost always expect it. But I guess in this current iteration, you know, given that he's playing counter to Gunther, he's, he just remained in that babyface role. And, you know, I think he did it pretty well. One thing that I notice about Miz and his experience as a live performer is that he's good at getting the crowd involved in the show as well. I mean, they were going to be obviously into it, but just even like getting the other guys cheers, you know, starting Ciampa chants and just his, you know, his expressions, the way he moves about the ring, the way he, you know, like before he got his hot tag or whatever, you know, he was kind of on the outside and then he just kind of like, you know, stomped his way up to the ring and everybody's like, oh, he's coming back. And, you know, he's a real professional in that regard. I mean, he really knows how to work the crowd, and I think he did it better than anybody else did tonight.
You mentioned Jay getting maybe the best response of the night. Elaborate on that and how much of that might have had to do with just being the first big-name babyface on the show, or do you think, no, this was, like, more than that?
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, certainly being the first one out, you know, with a hot crowd at the start of the night is always the ideal position to be in, but it was a sustained, you know, attraction to him and his act and the yeet and, I mean, just the kids around me in general, like they, I think if they wanted to turn Drew heel, they couldn't have done it against a better, like, first primary opponent, because I know they did a little bit with Rollins, but I don't think it quite connected there now that he's going against Jay. I mean, these kids just hated Drew. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, there were certainly some people, including myself, that still were cheering for Drew. And just to say, I mean, I think he's just, I'm happy to see that Drew's just getting reactions in general, probably about a 70-30 split, you know, boos to cheers. But, I mean, they were into the match. Of course, yeah, it was the first one. But the sustain just throughout it, like, the kids were just, not just a yeet chance, but, you know, just totally you know, on his side, you know, the whole time. Just, I mean, just so worried about him and just into it, you know, at an emotional level that, you know, I didn't see with any other acts by far.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, that
pop was
huge. It just was huge. I mean, I haven't heard a big pop like that in a while. I mean, not even for Cody. I mean, in the last couple of shows I've been to.
Wow. Well, let's talk about the CM Punk Seth Rollins dynamic a little bit. Whereabouts did you sit in the arena?
I was club level, first row, hard cam side. So had a great view. I decided to go club level this time.
They're playing right to you.
Yeah, I mean, lower level, if you're – I mean, I always try to be front row, and it's not because I'm trying to be snoozy or anything like that, but because I don't like people hold signs in front of my face. And I'm not against it. I know it's part of the culture, and I've been that guy too. But after my bout at WrestleMania a couple years ago with this kid holding the sign in my face for tickets that I paid a pretty good chunk of change for, I said never again. So I always sit row one now. And the thing with club level was nice because you could also get a good view of the stage, where last Raw I went to, I took my nieces to, they were bummed out because they really couldn't get a good view of the entrances. We're lower level, you know, row one. And there was a couple interviews right there at stage side that really they just had to look at the monitor to observe. So it's a good sweet spot. You know, if you can be in kind of one of the center, you know, areas in, you know, club level, you don't have to be row one necessarily, but, you know, just eliminates the chances of someone holding, you know, a yeet sign in your face all night, I guess. But the dynamic was I loved it.
I loved it.
The CM Punk chants, you know, definitely were throughout the arena, even from the beginning to the end, during commercial breaks, you know, anytime there was something, you know, a teaser of him or backstage or commercial or whatever it was. Yeah, definitely they like him. I don't think there's any grudges. I was one of those fans that bought a ticket to a Raw show or SmackDown or Super Show or whatever it was back then, and was disappointed when we thought he was going to be there. You know, I can't recall if he was actually advertised or not or whatever, but he was expected to be there and wasn't, and, you know, certainly was bummed out by that. At one point, he was my favorite wrestler on the roster, particularly when he first came back with the new entrance music. And when he didn't, you know, when he no-showed at Cleveland, I was like, man, screw this guy. You know, he's like, he doesn't want to, you know, stop in Cleveland. So I always felt like we got the shaft there. I was kind of on Seth Rollins' side, you know, during that promo. I'm happy to see a more serious Seth Rollins. It reminds me of the feud that he had with Matt Riddle last year, you know, where things were getting a little bit more real. And he does do a great job in, you know, kind of being stoic and playing, you know, when he's not dancing around and, you know, singing and being, you know, all flamboyant like he has been. I just think he's so much better and easier to watch. You know, he's in my mind, one of the top three wrestlers in the world. I mean, by far, he's up there, you know, if I were to be my top three. And I think I'd like to see this program play out to at least WrestleMania. I know some people were thinking, oh, I'd have it sooner than that. But I think he hasn't had that great of rivalries with this current heavyweight title run. I really don't think so. I mean, probably my favorite match was him and Shinsuke. But this should be like a good, sustainable program that could be two or three pay-per-views or whatever. I mean, probably won't be because I don't anticipate CM Punk wrestling that often. But just let it, you know, let it simmer and let's get a slow burn on this program because it has a, you know, chance to be, you know, something special.
Was there an ebb and flow to the crowd response as best you can tell? And as for where you were sitting, because I think you're actually really in a prime spot to kind of soak up visually in addition to audibly what was going on with fans around you and in the arena. Mm-hmm. Did it seem like some of the people who were cheering Seth and singing for Seth were also cheering for Punk and they're sort of reacting to things? Or did it feel like, no, this is a divided crowd and people, there's a real close 60-40, 50-50 type mix of pro-Seth versus pro-Punk. And if you're pro-Seth, you're anti-Punk. How did that come across?
No, it didn't seem that way. It really didn't. It seemed like people were just really listening and very in tune to what was going on. You know, considering it was also a bit of a younger crowd, I don't think they really know CM Punk that well either. So there probably were some kids that just really, you know, wanted to sing Seth Rollins' song and, you know, were more familiar with his act. And so they might have been leaning a little bit more towards Seth. But considering how much more of a serious tone he was taking in this promo, I think that they were just kind of like just engaged in, you know, just kind of watching and listening to, you know, what was kind of unfolding in front of them. Of course, you know, before Seth Rollins came out, I mean, they were eating out of, you know, the palm of CM Punk's hand. They were happy that he was signing to Raw. And, you know, of course, it's funny how that goes where people seem to have some kind of bias, you know, when, just because they're at that current show, they feel like they're like Raw's their home team or whatever. So they're happy that he signed with Raw.
It's so weird. Yeah.
It is kind of funny though, cause Raw has been, I think the show that's come to Cleveland the last few times. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if we get another one after this, maybe we'll get a B-level pay-per-view if we're lucky, but SmackDown seems to be a pipe dream at this point. But yeah, I mean, I just think that it seemed to me that they liked both more equally, you know, than divided. I mean, to answer your question, it was more of a, They didn't really care. They were just entertained. I thought it was a great standoff. I thought that, yeah, I mean, like I said, this could definitely be something special.
Was there any moment where it felt like one line hit really well or one line fell flat or didn't get the response that either of them were expecting when they said it?
No, not necessarily. I can't really think of the line in particular, but I do feel like Seth got the better of their kind of their promo duel, if you will. You know, whatever, you know, Punk said, you know, towards the end was okay. And are you finished? And, you know, everybody was just kind of like, oh yeah, you know, here comes Punk. I think some folks were expecting a little bit more of a pipe bomb-esque type situation, but I really think Seth kind of, you know, stood his ground in terms of promo ability. And like I said, I mean, folks were just entertained with that, you know, the way that just was told. And yeah, I think they're just really, really looking forward to seeing what happens there. I mean, if Punk can really go on to win the Rumble or not, I think either way, I mean, they're going to fight, and you know, it'll be a big, big money match.
Nate, let me throw to you if you've got a question for Dom.
You know, every time I'd come up with a question, one of you guys would jump on it. There, you guys are rapid fire right there. I don't have anything at the moment. Actually, you know what? I do, because anytime I talk to somebody that's in the building, and what was the reaction tonight? I know obviously for DIY, Gargano being in the building, Cleveland boy, but the two of them are actually like one of my favorite tag teams ever, and it's been bothering me that they've had such a muted response. I feel like there's so much more that can be done with those two if they were kind of given a little bit, but where they were in Cleveland tonight and paired with The Miz, did they come across, at least in the live audience, as a bit more of a kind of a big deal or anything like that as they have, you know, in the past? It seemed like, at least to me, they got a bit of a better pop tonight during their entrance. Yeah,
they definitely did. Yeah. Cool. I mean, compared to what I've seen them on television recently, you know, Gargano for sure was getting some Johnny Wrestling chants, and yeah, like I said, Miz really did a good job of, you know, helping get over, you know, Ciampa and Gargano as well, with just, you know, his experience of, you know, working the crowd and getting, you know, some chants going. But I don't know, I just don't see that like carrying over into other cities all that well. I mean, I think they're good, and Gargano performed really well, you know, for what his in ring ability is, but. Miz really carried that segment. He really did. He I don't want to say carried it on his back, but he definitely did the heavy lifting.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. And then the other thing that I just kind of thought about, going to the Nia Jax Becky Lynch segment. You know, what was did it come across like that they were anybody kind of invested in the Nia in kind of Nia Jax and Becky Lynch there? I mean, where they start kind of going back into the angle with, you know, where Becky got punched in the face, and all of that, kind of like they've got that natural story to tell. They've never faced one-on-one. Did that come across kind of more, or how did that come across in the building, I guess? It's like, I'm actually like kind of looking forward to this. I'm curious to see how you guys came across.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that they were definitely into hating Nia Jax and, you know, the things that she was saying. I mean, you know, how she said she made her and all this stuff, which, you know, really I don't think is the case. I mean, that might have been a catalyst for her kind of rise to the top in some regard. But as I noted in one of my notes, there was just like, I was really impressed with just Becky's ability to deliver promos that were just very convincing. Very much without hesitation or stuttering or any just problem with her delivery whatsoever. I mean, just so natural. And maybe because there was a little bit of element of realism to that, you know, the whole situation there between her and Nia. I don't know. I mean, I've never been like not a fan of Becky, but I'm not like a big fan of hers either. I'm more of a Charlotte Flair guy myself, but that's just, you know, there. But yeah, I think she definitely, you know, climbed the ladder, and in my book anyway, of you know, some of the top performers there, just given that the promo that she put on tonight. Yeah, but the people were really hating Nia. You know, I didn't, you know, enjoy the whip chants or anything like that, but it's good to see that she got some interaction during the segment, because when she came out, the crowd didn't even acknowledge her at all. I mean, she came out and there wasn't even a boo. I mean, there wasn't even a boo, like, until she started talking. So I don't know if that was, like, normal, just, you know, whatever. But Nia just, no reaction, like zero. I was looking around to just find anybody that was just throwing up a thumbs down or even a clap, and I couldn't find anybody.
Well,
so
you know,
that's
kind of what I was trying to get at without getting at it, because her music hit, and I know it's been a little while now she's had it, but I'm still expecting to hear, like, I'm not like most girls, and like, I don't associate this with Nia Jax yet. So it's like, you know, and actually it also ties into what I was just talking about with DIY. Like, I feel like music is such a big part of an act, and the music they've chosen for some of these acts recently just really, really doesn't work. When Nia came out tonight, I thought it was a very muted response. That's kind of what I was trying to get at. So I'm glad you got there. Thank you.
Yeah. And another kind of muted response before I forget was for Gunther and Imperium. I felt pretty bad for the response that they got. I mean, it was on, like, it might have been worse than the Katana Chance and Caden Carter response. And I mean, and I know in recent post shows I've heard on-site correspondents say that was a very no reaction type thing for them, but I actually thought they were received pretty well. Katana and Caden, I thought they were received pretty well, and folks were seemed to be into their match. But the Gunther and Imperium fellows, I mean, I pretty much, like, that's who my dad and I pretty much wanted to see the most. Like, you know, it's Gunther, longest reigning Intercontinental Champion. The guy's just a gem, and nobody was really expecting him, which I could at least find some folks that were cheering or doing something out in the crowd, unlike Nia Jax. But it was probably like the second most lukewarm reception that I saw myself. I felt bad for him because they just deserve more respect. Such a polished act.
Dom, talk about what happened during commercial breaks. It seemed like this was a show where, at least on a couple occasions, there was a long stretch of time for the wrestlers between ring entrance for them and their opponent coming out and the bell ringing to start the match.
Yeah, just the usual stuff, the crotch chops and the fan, you know, the sign of the night, you know, fan cam type stuff, some promo stuff that mostly everybody's seen before, you know, in terms of Peacock specials or video games. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same stuff that I've always seen. So, I mean, you know, it's good for the kids. I've never been big into, like, oh, great, I'm on this big screen at the stadium. You know, it's not a big deal to me. But kids seem to like it, you know, for the dance cam or whatever it is. But that's the worst part about going to these shows is, you know, dealing with the commercial breaks. That's why, honestly, I really do prefer, especially if I'm going to take, some kids to, you know, like my nieces or whatever, take them to a house show, because it's just – you know, match, intermission, couple matches, send you home happy, and it's pretty quick. Or at least even like a pay-per-view where, you know, you don't have as much of commercial breaks either. But it's just, it's tough to sit through. You know, I would kind of anticipate that I would see, okay, so-and-so's coming out. You know, I took my last bathroom break when Shinsuke came out because I knew they were going to cut the commercial before Cody did. So I said, hey, you know, let's go run to the bathroom so we don't get stuck, you know, at the end. And otherwise, yeah, I mean, it's pretty predictable at this point. Even Rhea, when she came out and, was like, okay, well, they're going to commercial break. It was pretty awesome to see her doing push-ups during the break. She's just in there doing push-ups. I was like, okay, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, she's a G. I like her.
That's tremendous. What happened before Raw went on the air?
So I heard Natalia's music. I think she won her main event match. I don't know who she faced. And then I was sitting down as Idris Anofi. I'm not sure if I pronounced his name right. Faced Von Wagner.
You did?
Von Wagner won. You know, I know I think they got a lot of stock in him. And, you know, from what I've seen is his stuff at NXT. I know we got, you know, Nate here who can obviously speak to that. I think he is deserving of a pretty good push. I don't know whatever happened. Didn't he have a manager with what's his face?
Mr. Stone.
He doesn't have the manager. Yeah, Robert Stone. Is he still around? Is he still his manager? Because he definitely wasn't there.
Yeah. So he wasn't there tonight. Yeah. Okay. That's actually interesting. There's he's still very heavily involved in Von Wagner's angle in NXT.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's good. I think he shows a lot of promise, and the crowd seemed pretty into it. You know, they were at least, you know, it was higher energy. I mean, of course, yeah, it's early in the night, but he did a good job and, you know, won clean. And, you know, I thought it was a decent, you know, decent little pre-show match. They said I caught probably the second half of it, but it was good stuff.
How over were Bronson Reed and Viking Raider Ivar in terms of brand?
So that is actually the only match that I can't speak on. I took my merch break during that match. I didn't know that was going to be the match that I was going to get my merch break on. I don't even recall like who was before them, but I walked off. It was about the 9:30 time, so I went to go see what was going on. You know, the last couple minutes of the Cavs game, and you know, bought a T-shirt. But yes, I'm not really sure. Didn't sound like a lot of cheering going on, but. You know, I could be wrong. So I don't really want to assume what was going on there.
Sure. Yeah. No problem.
A hell of a match.
Anything
a
else you
want to?
Yeah, they did. Anything else you want to bring up, Dom, before we let you go?
Let me see if I had anything else in my notes here. I mean, other than yeah, I mean the Jey Uso ovation was second to none. Yeah, other than that, I mean, the energy for the main event, like I said, was a little low, but I think it's just because it followed up that really high-caliber 3v3 match that the home crowd was just so into. And, yeah. You know, and Shinsuke was pretty over, too, I think. There was definitely some Shinsuke chants in the crowd, some people that were kind of cheering him on, and I thought they put together a heck of a match, but just, man, for it to, you know, follow up that, you know, that you know 3v3 match, it just seemed to sap a lot of the energy out of the crowd was just a shame because, I mean, they put on a great match. I mean, it was pretty awesome, you know, all the way to the end, and kind of knew the miss was going to happen. I saw at one point, you know, the mouth guard came out. I think it was during the Cody Cutter, and the ref like picked up the mouth guard real quick, threw it in his pocket, and I was like, oh shoot, like here comes the miss, you know, and of course he did it. But yeah, I think Shinsuke is doing awesome work right now. I'm so thrilled that he's got a voice. That he can really express himself, and I'm sure a lot of it is written for him. But at the same time, it's just great character work, and I mean, he's probably one of my favorite wrestlers right now in WWE. I just you know, I'm really happy that he's like just becoming more sincere. I love that line he said about how he you know removed that burden or whatever he said from you know, trying to please the fans or whatever he took it off his shoulders mm-hmm. or whatever it was, and I just think it's great because he walked out and just had this. You know, the swagger about him or whatever that, like, you know, we've seen it, you know, before, but, like, it's just so much like, I'm here, you know, worship me type walk and doesn't care if you do or not, really, but, like, he just, I don't know, man, he's something. I think I'm glad that he's getting, you know, another chance to show us that he's a main event player. And, gosh, it just, you know, just my dad was just saying, like, he can't keep up with, like all the main eventers right now, you know, he's just like, I just can't believe their roster. They don't have room for everyone. He's like, they're going to need another title belt. And I was like, no, we don't need more belts. You know, we see how that's working out over at AEW.
No, God,
but,
no.
I mean, it's just that he's like, how are they going to have room for all these guys? And he's like, you know, Brock Lesnar's about to pop up at any point, like before WrestleMania. Like, I mean, who knows, you know, with Roman being out right now, I mean, he'll come back. Like, how are they going to have TV time for these folks? It's almost becoming – it's a good problem to have, don't get me wrong, but it's also starting to be like, okay, let's focus on, you know, let's get these pushes. Like, I really want to see Drew continue to have a great push and not like Shinsuke, like I said. So, yeah.
It can be like having too many friends where you end up not being a good friend because you got too many friends. Like, you know, they can actually underserve some talent that's really over and deserving of a big push if they don't manage it well. And I think they're managing it well now, but you know, there is too much of a good thing in the sense that you could end up with a wrestler to feeling slighted. If especially it could work against Punk, you know, which is kind of the feeling in AEW. Oh, things are going well. Why do we need this guy? And I didn't agree with that. I think there's plenty of room for AEW to grow and bring in new top names, especially, well, that's a whole other topic, but there are a lot of reasons for that. But, you know, happened. But for the fans, you don't want them frustrated that, oh, now it looks like Punk came in, so Cody's not getting a push, or Punk came in, so now Randy Orton is not getting a push. They got to manage all that for the sake of protecting Punk from any resentment, you know, and that kind of thing. So far, I
forgot about Randy Orton. It's crazy. These all these main event players, yeah. Randy. And, you know, I think as long as they find – you know, intriguing storylines and feuds for everybody. You know, it doesn't always have to be for a title. Like, I think the Jay and Drew thing could really have some legs to it. Really, if they do this right, it could be a great rivalry, something for the ages. I think that's what it's just going to come down to, almost like Attitude Era-esque, you know. It's like everyone had their intriguing storyline. It was it didn't really matter. It didn't always have to be about a belt. And, I think as long as they do that right, it'll be fine. But, yeah, I mean, my dad was just kind of, talking about the main event scene in terms of, like, not all these guys can be champion. I was like, yeah, I get it. But, they still play their role. And I think that the WWE has more of a culture of, of a team type atmosphere where everybody just, is professionals. And at least I like to think so, folks are just more professional. They're not into that whole, like, oh, well, I want to be the champion. I want to be the champion. Like, we're not kids here. Like, we know what this is. This is a business, and it's all about the fans and just making sure that, it's just moves forward and the product grows and you get more butts in seats, that kind of thing. I mean, I hate to, like, break kayfabe or whatever, but, we're not getting, sour over, a predetermined match that's going to say if I'm going to be champion or not, right? I mean, certainly there's people that deserve to be spotlighted, for the hard work that they put in, and whether that's their character work, their technical ability. But at the same time, like, there's no room for jealousy or envy or, any of that kind of stuff, right? It's just like, we all work for the same company and we all want to succeed, no different than if you work for, just a regular business where there's goals that need to be met and we all get a piece of the pie, right? So it's just, yeah, I'd like to think it's a little bit more of a mature type, outlook there in terms of, we're not worried about, like, the wrestler's feelings, right? Like, it's, I don't want to be non-empathetic, but I just mean, I think that it, even just to think of Cody, right? Like, I don't think he's truly going to bed at night thinking, like, man, now that Punk's here, like, what does this mean? Like, am I not going to get my push or whatever? Like, I think he's just happy kind of quarterbacking and helping, maybe even just write the plays, at times, and just be like, hey, man, this is how we're going to win. And so that's kind of my thoughts on it. I've gone on a little bit long here, so I'll let you get to other callers, and I'm glad I was able to provide some perspective.
Dom, thanks a lot. Great comments, and really appreciate you sharing your experience at the show tonight.
Oh, absolutely. One more note. I just want to say, man, the bench at PW Torch is very deep, and you guys have a great roster of columnists and and journalists and all that. Like, when anybody needed a substitution, like you were saying at the top of the show, I mean, I've enjoyed all the episodes I've listened to lately, even with the subs. It's just, you guys are doing a great thing there. So I'm VIP for the year. I got that great annual deal. So thanks for putting that out. And, everybody else, hop on the VIP train. It's well worth it.
Awesome, Dom. I appreciate the kind words. And everybody who has been subdued hosting is listening and can hear it, but I'll pass along the comments to them directly too.
You got it. Have a good night.
Yep. We'll talk to you hopefully next time they're in town or sooner. All right. Our number, if you're live streaming us right now, 347-215-8558. You can call. Push 1 if you want to be on the show, which is what Brad from Florida did. Brad, you are up next. Welcome. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
In all fairness, Brad in Florida always pushes 1. I sometimes feel like I call too much. I don't want to monopolize, but always love, just chiming in on these things. And thanks for taking the call, Nate and Wade.
You're reliable, and you bring it when you call. So.
Well, thank you. I don't know how much I'm going to bring it tonight because Jay and Dom had some really great points I was listening to, and they were awesome. Ironically, the names of two prominent wrestlers on tonight's show, Dirty Dom and Jey Uso. But
you just took the words out of my mouth.
I knew what you were thinking. Nate, I heard you kind of snicker a little bit. And I thought you were going to think that. But, I just have random thoughts. First of all, so unimportant, really. But, with all the goodwill that Cody's created backstage, at the end, you mean to tell me that the two guys that are running in to save him are the Creed brothers? I mean, it's not Jey Uso. Obviously, I get it. Sami Zayn's not there. I mean, it could be his old friend CM Punk. That kind of would have been a cool way to end the night, with CM Punk saving Cody and starting maybe sort of a friendship that maybe lasts till they meet in the Royal Rumble at some point or whatever. But I thought that that would have been a cool way to end. I was just surprised it was the Creed brothers. I mean, I like the Creed brothers and all, but it just didn't make any sense. I mean, you know, you feel like Cody's made a relationship with everyone back there. And it was just kind of a strange random thing. I mean, do you guys think they're going anywhere with that? Or they were like, yeah, we don't have anyone to send out. Eh, screw it. Let's get the Creeds over and act like they're friends with Cody.
Well, what do you make of it, Nate?
So I kind of took it like, you know, they're coming out to save, you know, faces to come out to save faces. I like the fact that the Creeds are in the spot. Like, it kind of did feel a little, I guess, a little bit, you know, random, and maybe they could have had a little bit of a different way to approach it. But I like the fact the Creeds are in the spot. You know, anybody that Brad and I have talked extensively on PWT Talks NXT about our love for the Creeds, and it's like I'm sad to see them leave NXT. Glad to see them up on the main roster. They're a hell of a tag team, and to get them kind of to start rubbing elbows with an act like Cody Rhodes is it says a lot for what the company probably expects out of the Creeds, or at least, you know, giving them the opportunity to kind of take the ball and run with it. You know, and certainly from what we've seen so far out of the Creeds in NXT you know, so far in the main roster, I think they're certainly capable. I know, you know, their mic skills they've got to work on a little bit. They're certainly a heck of a lot better than they were a year and a half ago. You know, that might be the only thing that might, I don't even want to say hold them back, but for lack of a better term, those are the words I'm going to use right now. I'm, like I said, glad to see the Creeds there. The CM Punk, that's certainly a way that they could go right now. I say, with the exception of, and I think they already did a backstage walk by with CM Punk and Cody in the back at some point in the past, since CM Punk's returned, I think. Other than something like that, I think keep them apart as long as you can, until you're ready to start that feud. You know, if you are going to have them wrestle, I'm sure they're probably inevitably going to wrestle. I say leave them. You know, don't establish anything right now. Kind of let them do their own thing, and then, you know, 6 months or maybe building up to SummerSlam or something like that. You know, that's when, you know, maybe CM Punk comes out, makes a save, or maybe Cody makes a save for CM Punk, or, you know, they need a tag team partner or something. And that's when you start. Cause I think it'll mean more. At least that's kind of just my gut reaction anyway.
Brad, what else have you got?
Yeah, no, I hear you on that, Nate. Like, I do think, you know, maybe like Cody being saved by CM Punk would, I don't want to say make Cody look a little weaker and Punk look more alpha, but I hear you. Like, you know what I mean? It just feels like, I don't know, it should have been someone else. Now, if the Judgment Day was beating down Cody, it makes sense for the Creeds to come out and save, because they don't like the Judgment Day right now and they're facing them next week. But whatever. It's really not that important. I just thought it was a little interesting that it was them. I thought, like, the DIY, like, rubbing elbows with The Miz, in the same respect that the Creeds rubbing elbows with Cody, even in that way, I thought it was good for them, honestly. Like, it made me even care more about them. And I'm not saying Miz is someone that I care so much about, and he's such a top act, but I do like him a lot. And I do think that it gave them something different than just them and, like, Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae, that, you know, did make them seem a little bit more in the spotlight tonight. And I love, but the one thing, you know, that's weird to me, there's got to be a percentage of that crowd that doesn't know that Gargano's from Cleveland and doesn't know that The Miz is from Cleveland, even if it's 10%, right? Even if it's 15% or 20% or even some kids or whatever, why are they not announcing on a consistent basis where these wrestlers are from? Like, I paid very close attention to it. They don't say, from Cleveland, Ohio, Johnny Gargano and his tag team partner. Like, why are they not saying from Cleveland, Ohio, The Miz? Like, why is that not – like, sometimes they announce it. Like, I've heard him do it with, you know, Finn Balor from wherever he's – Winlow County, Ireland, or whatever he's from. I've heard them do it, but they don't do it consistently. And you would think for a hometown act, they would do it, you know, even more consistently. I just don't understand the lack of consistency with announcing where these people are from.
Yeah, I haven't paid as much attention as you have lately, so I can't even speak to that. I think people who buy tickets go to wrestling shows, it's not 100%, but most of them know and most of them pick up on if it's a hometown person who's there. Nate, do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I think a lot of people, too, even if they don't know The Miz necessarily, they're certainly in the Cleveland area. They're a fan of his dad, Mr. Hero. He's not Mr. Hero. He owns the Mr. Hero chain. I am no longer married, so I no longer have to go visit the family out in Cleveland. So, but anytime I was out there, Mr. Hero was always a stop for me. Other than that, though, I don't really have much to add there.
Brad, what else?
All right. One other thing I just kind of noticed throughout the show that was sprinkled in all throughout the show, especially like the first hour and a half, was like I'm always looking for like teases and different things. And I noticed that, you know, with CM Punk, well, when they were about to bring back CM Punk, like they would say things like Seth Rollins proving why he's one of the best in the world. And then they had Nakamura do the GTS and just different things all throughout the night. And maybe this is just total coincidence, but they were saying, like, R-Truth was saying, the boss, Damian, you like being the boss, but, you know, I think Rhea should be the boss. And, Rhea might be mad she's not the boss. And then they showed Adam Pearce and they're like, he's the boss, you know, the boss around here. They said the boss literally like 8 or 9 times tonight. And I'm just wondering if they're foreshadowing a Sasha Banks return at some point in the near future. Maybe, obviously, I guess it would be a Royal Rumble. I don't think it's going to be like December 28th SmackDown. But I just noticed it so much. And I think, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. I don't know if did you guys even notice that? I would imagine most people didn't notice it. Just me being crazy. But, well, if she comes back, you guys heard it from me.
We'll mention it. Yes, we'll say. Well, right, they gave it away. The strikes were all over the place.
It's a Tony D'Angelo call-up.
Right, exactly. It's a Tony. By the way, Nate, since you're on, are you excited about Carmelo
Yes.
Hayes on SmackDown on Friday?
I am. I wasn't sure. But we talked about this on I think it was on the VIP. Either on the VIP roundtable or it's on the VIP roundtable. But I didn't think it was going to be Carmelo Hayes. I was kind of. Where him and Trick have, you know, their thing going on right now. Neither Bruce Kelly or I, we gave it a chance, but we didn't think it was going to be him. I'm happy to see it. I'm curious, I'm curious to see if he actually wins it. Because if he does, now Trick Williams also being the, Iron Survivor, winning the Iron Survivor Challenge at Deadline, he now has a title shot for the NXT title. Would you potentially do like a title versus title at Stand and Deliver or something? Like, so that's kind of intriguing. I don't think that's necessarily the way they're going to go and take the belt off Logan Paul to give it to Carmelo Hayes. But by the same token, no, it was Carmelo Hayes that did some training with Cody, but did he do some training with Logan Paul? Why does that seem like...
Doesn't ring a bell with me.
I think he did, man.
I missed it.
I think they did.
Because, maybe it would be, he'd want to give back to Carmelo or something. But, don't quote me on that because I don't know if that's true or not. But yeah, like I said, I'm not going to put a lot of stock in the Carmelo, going anywhere in it. But glad to see it and see him get some more face time on the main roster. This is the second or third time he's kind of had a little run on the main roster. And I know we've been saying it for almost a year now, but I'm kind of hoping it stand and deliver. It's his swan song, Trick Williams. That feud, is kind of kaput. He puts Trick over, and then Carmelo goes up to the main roster. So I hope this is a bit of a trial run for him.
Very cool, Brad. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, that was great.
Awesome. Thanks, Brad.
All right. Let's go to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
So pretty much talk about everything else. And the main thing I want to talk about is Becky and Nia. The main thing I really wanted to talk about really was that promo interaction. So I think before I get to the promo itself, I think when Becky got punched in the face by Nia Jax, it happened on my birthday that year. And I remember that time I was super hyped because I was expecting Becky to show up that day because she was on SmackDown and all that stuff, right? And then they did the invasion when that happened. And I thought all that was really cool and well done to see. It was really cool to see. And then, she got punched in the face and all that happened with her being the main event of WrestleMania and all that stuff, which was cool. I was kind of pinpointing, like, people are speculating and just thinking that if it wasn't for Nia Jax, Becky would never have been the main event of WrestleMania. Now, I don't know if that's totally true. I can't really say. Who knows what would have happened at Survivor Series that year? We'll never know. But is it really a clear-cut thing that if Nia never punched Becky in the face and she became most biggest star of the company even more than she already was, wasn't she ever going to be – well, I guess my question is, would she be in the position she is today right now had that never happened? If it all ended up happening perfectly fine and she never got punched in the face, will she be in the position that she is right now currently to this day?
Yeah, no, good question. This felt like they were, to me, really exaggerating a moment in wrestling history in terms of the emphasis that Becky wouldn't have been a big star if not for it. And it's a nice story to tell. There's a history there. They can go to the footage. People are going to have their opinion on what it did for Becky. I'm trying to build up to this notion that I think is indisputable, which is Becky was going to be a big star if Nia Jax never existed. I mean, she's just so good at what she does. And, was main event. I mean, So I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think if I should temper my certitude on this, but I don't think I should. I think they've exaggerated for the sake of the story or trying to blow. That's not for Becky, slow motion, real punch out of proportion in order to inflate the feud. What do you think, Nate?
So the best analogy that I can kind of come up with right now is, we kind of define the timeline in wrestling in eras, right? So the golden era, the attitude era. Well, when do those times actually start? And so when does the attitude era actually start? And in my mind, I don't have an exact time, but in my mind, it's 97, 98. But some people have an exact, it was this particular moment. This is when the Attitude Era started, and this is when the Attitude Era started. And there's a lot of people who will agree on multiple different moments on when the Attitude Era started, but, I don't know if there's, just necessarily this is the date of the Attitude Era. And what I think they're trying to do here is say that this was a moment that defined the man. This is a moment that they can point to and say with, this particular moment, that iconic shot of her walking up the stands with the blood dripping down her face, that moment defined what became the man. Whether or not she would have been able to take the momentum from that and turn it into exactly the same character and have exactly the same trajectory, we'll never know. Which is she capable of it? 100%. But I don't know, you know, what decisions backstage would have or wouldn't have been made. I think if memory serves, that punch forced her to be out of a match with Ronda Rousey. Now that I think about it.
Yeah.
So actually it could have been a completely different trajectory. But again, yeah, we'll never really know. But in terms of was she capable of it? I think definitely.
Yeah. I mean, the course is different. I just don't think avoiding one, you know, having your course changed. Becky has shown herself to be. So yeah, I'll just put it there. Akal, what else?
And also too, I define when Becky became the man was when she slapped Charlotte at SummerSlam that year. So I think that's where the man thing was born into, was at SummerSlam that year. So that's how I view when the man thing started with Becky. But anyway, so there was that. And so you're talking about the whole CM Punk Seth Rollins thing, we'll get to that already, but exhaust that to death at this point. I want to get to Rhea Ripley then and her interaction with Ivy Nile and what do you think that direction is going to? I think the way they've been positioning Ivy so far, also with the Creed brothers as a whole, all three of them, have been so entertaining, so good. I'm glad the match is happening too. By the way, with the Creed at next week on Raw with the Judgment Day, so looking forward to that. And the interaction with Rhea and Nia, Ivy Nile, was really interesting. I really thought it was like a cool stare down. You have, you know, these, you know, obviously this upcomer who's they're trying to establish, and they have of course Rhea, who's been kind of in limbo with not really being presented as I thought she would went out by now when she won the championship, but now she's trying to do something with Rhea, which is great. But at least they interact with them too, how that's going to transpire, and then also with the match with the next week with the Creeds and Judgment Day.
Nate, go ahead.
So, I agree with you. I think it's very entertaining what they're doing with them, and I am looking forward to this match. I'm a little like I'm happy to see Ivy Nile on the main roster right now. I was nervous when the Creed got. Talking months ago when, you know, back in NXT, when, you know, looking at the Creeds as a huge up and coming tag team, and, you know, it's inevitable at this point, they're going to be called up in just a matter of time. Would Ivy Nile be called up with them? And, you know, she was a great addition. She's a great addition to their act, but and there were certainly some, you know, amazing improvements on the mic and in the ring that she had, but I didn't, both myself, or all three of us, myself, Bruce and Kelly on PWT Talk, we weren't really sure if she was ready to be called up and put into a main roster spot. Very similar to Maxine, you know, when she kind of got pulled out of NXT. I can't even think of the name that she was before Maxine, but she pulled out of NXT and brought into, you know, Maximum Male Models. It was kind of like ooh, is that going to work? But she proved that she could do it. That was kind of what I was wondering with Ivy Nile. And I think, I've got faith in her. I think she can do it. She showed a lot of improvement. So I'm really looking forward to this match through Ripley. I think it's going to be, it should be really hard hitting. Rhea should be able to, you know, help carry her through, and have, you know, have, hopefully have probably the best match. Hopefully the best match Ivy Nile, you know, has had in her career so far. At least it has the potential to get there. But yeah, I, as far as, you know, the angle, not sure exactly, you know, 100% where they're going to go with it. Fantasy booking isn't always necessarily my strongest suit, but in terms of, you know, Ivy Nile and her in the spot that she is in right now, I think she's in a great spot because she's got a little, right now they're putting a bit of a spotlight on her to kind of giving her you know, it's a bit of a test to see if you know, probably see if you sink or swim type of a deal. But she also, up until this point hasn't quite had the spotlight on her like a lot on the main roster. And I think that's kind of a good place for her to be. It protects her a little bit, but they're going to kind of, you know, give her that opportunity to shine. I think she's got the potential to do it. I think that, you know, both she and the Creeds are a great addition to the main roster.
Kyle, what else have you got for us?
Jey Uso and Matt, I haven't mentioned it probably earlier before, but I really enjoyed that match. I was surprised that McIntyre won. But maybe not, because they're pushing to be in. You know, he's going to face Rollins on New Year's Day, so I guess that was the reason for him to win today, I guess. So you do that rematch on Raw in the New Year. So, but I thought overall the match was great. I also enjoyed the interaction between Jey and Drew. We talked about the interaction with Punk and Rollins. Like the interaction with Jey and Drew was really good too. Just them being like, but Jey saying that he's being a selfish person, he's being portrayed as still the good guy in this situation, even though he is somewhat justified. But Jey is still so super over right now, and people don't really care anymore. He's been far removed from Roman Reigns, and like I said, logically, in the bigger the popular issue of the brother in terms of the fan reaction and what the way he's been just over with the crowd since he became a singles wrestler. But I just enjoyed the match stuff, enjoyed this McIntyre run in terms of him being I've been more interested in McIntyre as a heel than I did as a babyface. I find it more interesting now than I did before. But I just think that heading into the Royal Rumble and all this, so we think the direction is for both Jey and McIntyre headed to WrestleMania. We'll probably be Jey and Jimmy on how they'll get to that, although it'll make Jimmy interesting. But how do you think that the direction that's going to go moving forward? What do you think their interactions with each other headed into the Rumble is going to be? But that's a digital call.
All right, cool. Yeah, thanks, Kyle. It's been interesting watching. As popular as Jey is and as integral as Jey and Jimmy have been in this massive Bloodline story arc, it's not like they're completely protecting them. You know, like Jay's somebody who if Seth went down with an injury and back and they didn't sign CM Punk and things with Cody weren't going as well, he could be the number one or number two babyface in the company if they protected him and pushed him in that way. And the crowds are super into him, but he's not. He's at that next level down in terms of how he's being pushed, but it's working. Like, I mean, there was a point in the Drew match going into commercial where Cole says, Jey has a chance. And I'm like, isn't that baked in? Like, doesn't Jey have a chance in every match, even against someone of Drew McIntyre's level? Like, it's interesting how they frame him. So I'm not sure what that says about what their trajectory is between now and WrestleMania and whether Jey is a top priority and everything is filler until they get to something that they really have in mind for him, or if he's going to be that sixth person they worry about when coming up with a lineup and maybe he doesn't get a prime spot. Nate, what are you sensing?
I'm kind of like right there with you. I mean, it seems like, you know, at least with where they're going right now, they could take this feud with Drew McIntyre and kind of extend it through WrestleMania. Because right now with Roman Reigns out, the Bloodline storyline obviously is still progressing with Jimmy and Solo, but it's kind of just on, I don't know, I feel like it's on hold right now until, you know, Roman is really back in the fold The tribal chief is kind of, you know, progressing the stories again. At least that's kind of how I feel about it. So it kind of almost makes sense to me that it's like, all right, let's do something with him that's going to be, you know, somewhat impactful, maybe not necessarily meaningful, but at least impactful, you know, to kind of keep him relevant. And, you know, he's obviously a fan favorite. You know, people, you know, love the Yeet and chanting, chanting that with him and all of that. It seems like they're at least they've got those legal issues figured out because things weren't blurred and stuff. But yeah, so I think it could certainly work. And I mean, I've said this a couple times, I think probably maybe even on this show, definitely on PWT Talks NXT in the past, you know, we've, when the Bloodline has come up, but Jay, I mean, he certainly presents himself as a star, as a superstar. I mean, the family genes he's certainly got the good ones. Let's put it that way. You know, he's not necessarily somebody like an entertainer to the point of, or to the caliber of like The Rock or something like that. But like you said, if they were to protect him and protect him and present him correctly, I think he could easily, you know, in a pinch, kind of slot in as a number one baby face and, you know, carry the company carry Raw at least, you know, for a temporary period of time, if they needed to just kind of wait for somebody to heal or shuffle a few people around or whatever. He's definitely got that talent and ability. Was there another part of the question? I feel like there was something else that I missed.
To the best of my recollection, you covered it.
Okay. For some reason, I was thinking there was something else, but all right, cool.
Well,
there we go.
Kyle's
then.
Still there. Let's find out. Kyle, I'll throw him back. Kyle, anything Nate didn't cover there?
I just said that with I was comparing the difference again, like I had the last week between Jay and Jimmy. That's pretty much what I was pretty much getting into in terms of the way they've been presented and how Jay's been more, and I kind of see what you mean. Jay has been losing a lot lately. I don't know why you keep having blues, you know. I think that's kind of be careful with that as well, with him losing these big matches. And I guess that's the other big problem. I mean, a issue they got to be careful of, but it's still I think it's still the interest level that people will feel about a Jay Jimmy match at WrestleMania at that point. That's pretty much the bottom line to that, and how people get all interested at this point with that match anymore because of how they've been treating Jay since he's been to Raw, and clearly it's between Jimmy doing really nothing and all that stuff. So that's pretty much what it was, but kind of repeated myself from Friday, but that was really it.
Okay.
All right, yeah, cool. Thanks, Kyle. I think Jay versus Jimmy should be saved as something really special. And if they can protect them just enough, and that works for me. I think that's a good use of both of them at that point, but they might have other things in mind too. You know, we'll find out. Cool. All right. Let's wrap up with JB from Detroit. And he said, what is the face heel dynamic in the Seth Rollins CM Punk feud? The reactions seemed rather split throughout their interactions tonight. Nate, this just seems like a pick'em. I mean, it really does, and I think real life events will steer this. My hunch is they both come out of it as baby faces. There's a chance they want to tell a story, or they're considering telling a story of Punk winning over Seth on air, as that might happen off air, as much as Seth might think it won't or doesn't want to think it could, because he wants to think he's right about Punk. But part of him as a company guy wants it to work out with Punk, because the more opponents you can make money with, the better. I think WWE is willing to let fans choose, and I think that tonight they'd be happy with what they heard, you know, and that it is a 50-50 or 60-40, you know, split depending on the night and the material.
Did I lose you? Just fade. Okay.
I threw to you and you were silent, so maybe we just had an internet glitch. But yeah, what do you think about the face heel dynamic of Seth and Punk?
Okay, I think we did have a little glitch. It's been a little, I think our connection, you and I, it's been a little glitchy all night. But I know I said earlier tonight, like, I thought that it was kind of a Seth kind of coming across more heel, CM Punk more face. But I think in terms of crowd reaction, it's going to probably be somewhat split. I think CM Punk is probably going to be continuing to do kind of that smiley, overly nice, hey, I'm really happy to be here, sorry, you know, things like that. So that kind of come across as a more traditional baby sense in that baby face in that sense. Whereas, you know, we're probably going to see some more, you know, negative emotions like anger and things coming from Seth Rollins that might make him feel like more of a heel in a traditional sense. But again, you know, as we talked about earlier in the night, where this is kind of a feud that's really grounded in reality. And it has two characters that are very beloved characters. You know, people, you've got your diehard Seth Rollins fans, got real diehard CM Punk fans. I think no matter what, whether CM Punk was, you know, the most despicable heel or not, I think you're still going to have a good solid chunk of fans, you know, in his corner. And same thing with Seth Rollins. You know, people want to chant, you know, sing the song and, you know, kind of be a part of his shtick. So yeah, I think it's going to kind of be a, you know, pick it. You know, I think they're going to present it as a little bit more cut and dry where, you know, like I said, kind of traditional, emotions that we're going to get, but yeah, that's the thing. It's going to be pick it.
Number two, he says, was it a good idea for Rollins to question whether Punk has, quote, any gas left in his old tank? It actually rings a little too true and puts the defense mindset Punk as an in-ring wrestler might be well past his prime. You know, he's been away a while, and, you know, officially, unofficially, he hasn't been, you know, active most of that time. They haven't made references to his MMA career either that I picked up on, much less AEW. To me, it's fair game for Seth, but I wouldn't dwell on it. I made the case about TNA with Sting back in the day. Like, they shouldn't be talking about his age. I don't think fans are thinking about – we're thinking 15 years ago about Sting being – old. And Punk looks young enough now. I think he looks actually more spry than he did in AEW, just putting on a little more muscle mass and his hair and, you know, beard look, there's some gray, but he looks better. I just don't think people are watching Punk walk to the ring going, oh, this guy's old and frail. So I wouldn't lean on it hard, but it feels like Seth is sort of going, I've been a workhorse. I'm a current champ. I'm a defending world champion. Let's see what you got. I mean, I think that's a natural thing to say. If a quarterback left the NFL for 5 years and came back, that'd be a natural question to ask too. Nate, what do you think?
I'm in about like 100% agreement with you, so I'm just going to leave it there.
Cool. Number three out of four, he goes, is it a good idea for Punk to win the Royal Rumble? I truly feel as though it would take away from the two-year journey of Cody's story, even if he wins the Elimination Chamber to make up for it. I think it would be an even worse idea if Punk chooses Rollins over Roman. Look weak for taking the path of least resistance while simultaneously devaluing the Cody-Roman match. You know, WWE's got this. I trust that they have not considered this. So I think Cody's going to win the Rumble. If he doesn't, I think they have a really good reason that will be defendable, but not something everybody loves. Because I do, in principle, agree in a generic sense with what JB is saying, which is Cody's got to win the Rumble, choose Roman, and just follow that path regardless of what happened with Punk. There's a decent amount of time to travel between now and then, less than 2 months, but it's still a ways off. Nate, what do you think about that? Is that a conundrum? Do you think it's a tough choice, or is it obvious?
I don't know. I personally, like last year, I was one of the people that was in the camp that Cody should go and, you know, win the Rumble and tell his story. And, you know, of course, as everything unfolded and everything, and I liked the story and the way that it played out. But, you know, I kind of want to see Cody finish that story and kind of have his moment at the Rumble. Like, you know, what, like, kind of just the moment that he just had at War Games, you know, being able to be in his father's match, you know, having a Rhodes in War Games, it just felt right. So I kind of want to see him have those moments and kind of build up to a world title reign, and kind of be able to finish that story. The CM Punk stuff obviously kind of throws a monkey wrench in all of that. If, you know, you're looking at this from, I don't know, a month ago, whenever was the negotiations actually started. So it kind of, you know, throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into that Cody Rhodes story. But, you know, they could certainly still tell some sort of a compelling story and get him to finish his story. But I don't know. At least the most obvious to me kind of seems like him winning the Rumble is kind of it.
And I think they might be feeling it out as they go. They probably have a preferred path they think they might be locked in on, but they want to be nimble. They want to be pliable in case things go a different direction. I mean, Punk has not dramatically delivered in the ratings department yet. You know, SmackDown was – there was a show last month that drew as well as Friday SmackDown did. You know, it was on the higher end. It improved upon last week for sure. He makes a difference, but I don't know if he makes enough of a difference where you go, oh, this is a whole other level of star we just got. But the crowd reactions have been great. So, you know, the Raw he was on, he was the fourth most watched segment of the show. He was also in the worst spot to be in, operating with a lot of people who wanted to be, who wanted to see Punk talk, did not stick around for 3 hours to watch him talk. So the other big names did show up earlier, and the fans got to see them in larger numbers. So, you know, but it was still a really good number, and Raw was higher than it had been in a long time. And, you know, but at the same time, Raw, I'm very proud of my ratings reports at pwtorch.com, and I try to pull out the key factors in these, and we had the minute-by-minute report that I did last week on the website on the Punk dynamic on that Raw. And, you know, one of the things, yeah, it was one of the highest rated Raws in a while, but there were several other shows this year that did better. And for PLE, maybe the show would have done nearly as well, because it's the shows after PLEs, like the Rumble and Mania and SummerSlam, that have done, you know, right around the same numbers. So it's just hard to tell right now how much of a difference Punk is making. You know, I mean, SmackDown had Randy Orton wrestling. Okay, well, I would expect a rating to go up. Punk didn't create a new ceiling for the year for anything. So if I'm management, I'm like, okay, he's a good player to add, but it's not like, you know, in AEW where early on, if Punk was in a segment, you know, it was clearly higher than what anyone else was doing. So yeah, they just got to play by ear, but I wouldn't do anything to mess with what's going right with Cody. Cause you know, Cody, you're getting a stable, hardworking company guy who doesn't have, you know, the track record of drama that Punk does. I mean, Cody had some stuff happen in AEW, but he sure handled it better. And it's hard for me to find anybody who blames Cody as much as people in AEW blame Punk for making people miserable. All right, fourth, it might just be me, but all of the I'm just happy to have you back here moments that Punk has had with interactions with wrestlers new and old, particularly tonight in the segment with Kofi, Gable, and Ricochet. So, JB, I don't think you quite – I think you're missing a word in there. You said it might just be me, but all those moments with Punk has had in interactions with wrestlers, particularly tonight. I can't tell if you're coming down for or against it. But that said, it feels a little heavy-handed, propaganda-like. Hey, look, Kofi, Gable, Ricochet, you're great. I'm making a joke at Kofi's expense, and I'll catch up with you guys later. It does sort of feel like, yeah, we're filming what we want you to believe is what's going on behind the scenes. The fact is it is. I mean, the people who've been around Punk since he came back say he's almost too nice. Like, they're just like, seriously, man, this doesn't seem like it's him. So, you know, has he been coached or is he self-aware or whatever? I don't know. But they're bringing it onto the airwaves, and there's a chance that it could backfire by being too saccharine, too maudlin. I don't know. Whatever word you want to choose. But it also could be planting seeds for something that they want as an option with this character later, too, which is he was gregarious and outgoing and affable and friendly, but it was part of a plan. He was never sincere. Like, they could turn him heel, and the story is, yeah, I was over the top to see if I could, like, not trick everybody, but have everyone's guard go down and see how quickly these saps would forgive me. I don't know. They could do all kinds of things if they did a heel turn with him. Nate, what do you think?
I mean, I kind of like that. I think is the best or at least the option that kind of resonates with me the most is kind of have him kind of turn on him. Cause yeah, they seem a little heavy handed and a little just, kind of the almost like a Disneyfication of it. Like what they would, you know, what they want you to believe is going on behind the scenes. And yeah, they just, you know, like, hey, Jamaican man, what's up? And it's like, yeah, that's 10 years ago. And it's not even, cause you can kind of make that joke, like make the case like, okay, you know, for it's kind of paying, you know, an homage to those that have been watching the show for, you know, years and years and years, you know, so it's a little bit of an Easter egg for you, you know, kind of, hey, Jamaican man. But I don't know, it didn't really hit with me. Didn't really sound like it hit with you or with JB either. So I don't know, it just kind of seems like it's over the top. But if he is kind of just being overly nice to then all of a sudden get this awesome lucrative contract with Raw, get his spot in the Rumble, get his shot at the WWE title, potentially dethrone Roman Reigns, and then all of a sudden turn on, ha, you know, why not? It's certainly compelling, you know, the character of CM Punk, I personally like more as a heel, you know, when he's kind of digging into those things because I mean, he's a master at blurring the lines between real and like, what's real and what's not. So turning him heel, that could be some really, I guess, edgier TV, and kind of like made people a little bit more invested in that character. But yeah, it was a little all over the place there, but there's so many different directions that they could go with CM Punk. And like I said, if he keeps his nose clean backstage, I'm really curious and excited and looking forward to seeing what the future holds from here in WWE.
Very good. Nate, thank you. We had a lot to talk about. I think we covered it.
Yes, I think so. I think so. But no, thank you very much for having me. It was a blast. Good to talk with all the callers. Some familiar voices, some I don't get to talk to very often. So always a blast.
Excellent. We'll do this again soon. Thank you, listeners. Thanks to our on-site correspondent, Tom. Thanks to our callers and emailers. And we will talk to you all next time, which will be on the Flagship tomorrow, on the Blue Logo Show, and then on the Dynamite Post Show here on our Red Logo Show.